I would not be surprised that some of the greatest resistance are people that have investment in pharma.
I said, Mom, I'm here to tell you, cannabis is what saved me.
Hi, I'm David Crosby, and you're listening to Reefer Madness, the podcast.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast, with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, we're back.
Hey, Trevor.
So?
You've been traveling.
I've been traveling. It's actually kind of nice here in Dauphin, Manitoba, Canada. You know, we were just recently at a outdoor party barbecue at our friend John's house. And, you know, the weather here is nice, but I went a little further south for a few days and met a bunch of people in the cannabis industry.
You met some pretty highfalutin people in the cannabis industry, my friend. I'm very impressed.
No, it was cool. we might as well tell the listeners, too. I am fine talking one-on-one to people, and in fact, I am fine. You put me on a stage in front of 1,000 people, I'm fine talking. One of my, you know, little anxieties is, you know, put me in a big group, you know, a social, and go try to introduce myself one-on-one to everybody in the room. Gives me a little bit of the anxiety. So the fact that I managed to do that at CanMed 23 in Marco Island, Florida, I'm impressed that I didn't have any little anxiety attacks over that. It seemed to have gone okay.
So quick summary now. You went down to CanMed 23. Just a quick summary. How did you end up at this table and who were you sitting with?
So, and this will come up more in future episodes, but I went down. So on the first day, there was sort of three streams of talks. There was medical talks, which I'd normally have been at if I was just an attendee. There's a capital markets talk and sort of a cultivation stream of talks. I ended up in the capital markets one. A gentleman called David Traylor invited me to sit on a panel with Dr. Ethan Russo, you know, cannabis legend, and Dr. Didi or David Miri, and it was supposed to be Dr. Stacy Gruber from Harvard, but she unfortunately couldn't make it, and me talking about cannabis cannabinoids and indications, and that went okay. Didn't make too much of a fool of myself, and didn't step on the PhD's toes too much. So, but because I was down there, you know, I talked for help talk on a panel for about an hour, but that also meant I got to go a whole bunch of other talks and just, you know, with the little events all around the conference, got to meet a whole bunch of cool people.
And bring out your phone and record them.
Well, you know, that's kind of what we do now.
Well,
hi, I'm from Canada. You want to talk into my phone?
Tell me about what you know about cannabis. So this is almost like your road stories.
I guess this is my version of road stories, although, you know, I only had to travel once and then sort of just wander around a conference room.
So how are you going to do this? We've got four stories you're going to introduce them individually, or you want to do it right now, all of them?
How about we'll do them one at a time? So we'll start with Ahmed from Morocco. So on opening night, there was a reception for everybody, and the Moroccans were hard to miss because they were a big group, and they were all wearing green t-shirts that said Morocco. So, you know, that was a pretty easy thing to say, okay, these people are all together. Why don't I wander up to them and ask them about, you know, cannabis in Morocco? I was telling you that, you know, historically, apparently people have been growing cannabis in Morocco since, you know, at least the time of the Romans. And then you kind of laughed at me and said, you know, there might even be a song about that. So what song there, Kirk?
Well, Morocco was a destination for the hitchhikers of the 60s and early 70s. Used to go through Europe and Northern Africa, and Tangiers was the place that everyone used to go get their hashish. And Crosby, Stills and Nash have a song called Marrakesh Express, basically talking about going to Marrakesh, and it's pretty much a drug song. Not that we're going to get into Crosby, Stills, and Nash, but Nash wanted to record the song with the Hollies, but the Hollies considered it too much of a drug song. So it made me laugh to think that Ahmed saying that Morocco's for the first time is going to have a cannabis conference. I'm thinking, guys have been going down to Tangiers for decades.
But as Ahmed said,
check out the hashish.
In August 2023, Morocco should have its first legal cannabis crop coming off the field, and then they are running a conference there in November.
Yeah, now I googled it, and it's called the Morocco Cannabis Expo 2023, and on the webpage it says September 2021-22-23, September 2023, and he's on the panel, so I'm pretty sure that I'm on the right expo. So I guess check the dates.
Yeah,
they may have changed it.
No, and but how about let's go and listen to Ahmed.
Fantastic.
So we're at Canamed 23, and I'm here with Ahmed. Ahmed is all the way from Morocco, and is going to tell me a little bit about what's going on with cannabis in Morocco. Ahmed, what's going on in Morocco?
My name is Ahmed. I am the coordinator of the Moroccan team who attend CanMed this year. Our association, AMCUC, is a non-profit association in Morocco who help the government of Morocco to set up the system, legal system, cannabis in Morocco. The first step were last year that we approved the Parliament of Morocco approved the law for legalization of the cannabis. And now we are in the second step, is to help medical staff to understand all the benefits of cannabis. That's why we attend this year CanMed 23. And we expect to organize in Morocco the first conference in cannabis in Africa. Will we be in November 20 and 21st and 22nd in the city Al Hoceima. Al Hoceima is the capital of cannabis in Morocco. That's what we will organize our conference there, because Morocco is known as country who have a long history of cannabis cultivation.
Yeah, you were saying that since at least the time of the Romans, maybe longer, right?
Yes, yes. We know that the Romans empire 500 years before Jesus, they cultivate cannabis in Morocco. And since this date, all the people in the north of Morocco, because the weather, the altitude, produce the one of the best plant of cannabis in the world.
And you said in August of this year there should be the first legal the first legal crop should come off in November.
In August, because some farmer get license from the Moroccan government to grow cannabis legally, and we will have the first come in on August. That's what we organize our conference in November.
That's very exciting, Ahmed. It's really nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you.
So, I think Ahmed might literally have been the first person I talked to at the whole conference, so it's nice that we sort of teed him up first. So, from Ahmed, next I want to go to the Texas A&M group. So, during my panel, There was a group, I think they even at that point said they're from Texas A&M, who asked some what I thought were really good questions, but we sort of ran out of time on the panel to answer them. So I kind of met them in the hallway afterwards and talked to them a little bit. And the first thing I know, now, for those of you who haven't met me in person, I'm a pretty big guy, relatively tall. Everything is bigger in Texas, Kirk. This A&M panel towered over me. And so, but like I was saying, the conference definitely had, you know, medical people, capital markets, we'll call investment type people, and cultivation people. So the A&M group were in the cultivation end. And the three voices you're going to hear is we've got Russell Jessup. He's an associate professor at A&M. Clayton Moore, I thought was interesting, was a student. They brought along a student in AgriLife and Soil Crop Sciences. And David Boltensberger, who's the head, the professor and head of Soil and Crop Sciences at Texas A&M. And I thought you'd really enjoy this one because, well, we all know how much you like hemp and like to talk about the cultivation of it.
Yeah, no, well, we've had two episodes specifically on hemp, and that's episode 45, Hemp Scents and CBDities. And we've also had season 2, episode 9, Hemp Hooray. And there's a lot of similarities in what we learned from those episodes. And these are local hemp farmers in Dauphin, Manitoba, Canada. And I just felt that these guys are learning from an academic perspective how to do it locally, because what we learned from those episodes was that hemp is like grass. So harvesting hemp is like harvesting grass. As soon as you cut it, it starts to compost. So I'm sure they're trying to research different technologies to grow hemp in a great way, and Lyle talked to us about that when in episode 45. So I also found it interesting. Texas A&M means agricultural mechanical, and you were talking to the agriculture people. When I googled their hemp programs, they're into it on the engineering side too, because their engineers are going for are looking at hempcrete, which is another subject that we dealt with in episode 77. So that this three minute spot that you got for Texas A&M, kind of, we've done 3 hours on it in episodes. Just saying. So it's kind of cool that you're talking to people who are catching up to Canadians. Does that make sense?
Sure. I don't know if they would agree that they're catching up, but yes, they were very, very polite, large.
Gentleman.
Who I was very happy gave me some time. So let's listen to the Texas A&M group. So right now we have a couple of people from Texas A&M. So I'm going to start with Russell. Russell, what are you guys doing?
Howdy, my name is Russ. I'm a professor and industrial hemp breeder at Texas A&M University, and we have been working on improving industrial hemp for Texas and the southern U.S. for about 3 years now. Grain, fiber, cannabinoids, any commodity you can think of.
That's excellent. And Clayton, you're also with the A&M group. What are you doing? We'll call it cannabis related.
Hi, my name's Clayton Moore. I'm a student researcher in the industrial hemp breeding program focusing on the hemp conversion program. I also run a student organization of 74 active members with over 51 different majors in diversity.
That's cool. Okay, what's hemp conversion? I have no idea. What does that mean?
The hemp conversion program is where I reach out to breeders, cultivators all around the world within a 30 degrees north latitude to a 30 degrees south latitude for more southern coastal adapted hemp. We'll take those donations to cross with our heat and drought tolerant lines that are also compliant under the 0.3% THC range, and then we'll go to the F2 generation to select from recessive alleles that show higher CBD and lower THC and compliance and heat and drought tolerance.
I'm impressed. And David, you're also with the A&M team. What do you have to tell me about the program you guys are running?
Well, David Boltensberger. I'm the department head for soil and crop sciences at Texas A&M, but one of the initiators of research in hemp at Texas A&M. Pushed through getting a research license for the university. And then we have programs from plant pathology to gene editing and molecular genetics to the breeding that you heard Russ talk about, to the student programs Clayton talked about, but try to stay ahead of all of those and keep pushing for where there's new opportunity to make hemp a viable crop for Texas.
That's excellent. And where are you guys hoping that maybe the program will go next?
Well, one of the things that we look for is for hemp to go to the field. So most of the production currently for any of the medicinal hemp or medicinal marijuana is done in a greenhouse or growth room. We hope to develop the production practices to take it to the field. Hemp has been growing in the field in Texas. And we're starting to get some producers who are successfully growing it and getting it to market. And that's really where we're concentrating, is getting it to the field.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. This was great. It was nice meeting all of you.
So, Kirk, there was a bunch of cannabis nurses there. I know. I think you said at some point, well, of course, the most fun people at any conference are nurses. And they were fun and got to have...
Find the nurses, man. When you go to a medical conference, find the nurses.
So yeah. I had dinner at the same table as a bunch of cannabis nurses, and I was trying to get organized the next day to get, because they had the president of the Cannabis Nurses Association of America, I think I have that right. She was there, but we just never seemed to quite connect for me to get a few words out of her. But while I was trying to connect with them, the conference had a sort of a trade show area where different companies had booths set up. And in one booth was an older gentleman, and asked, you know, what he was doing there. And while he was waiting for his wife, well, she's written a book. And so this is Kathy Heigl. So she's a cytotechnologist. I had no idea what that was, but apparently that's, you look through a microscope at cancer cells. And
it's an education, it's a qualification, yep.
Yeah, and she had a friend who was going to open like a cannabis store or cannabis clinic. And she said, well, you know, if you're going to do that, you're going to need a whole bunch of documentation. Why don't I help you with that? So she started doing a bunch of cannabis research for this friend who's going to open up a cannabis store, cannabis clinic. And along the short of it, the friend's business didn't get licensed. It didn't happen. But now Kathy's got all of this research she's done on cannabis, and she turned it into a textbook. And we were sort of talking off camera, you know, we keep getting told that there's no research to back up cannabis. This is a really well-referenced, easy-to-read textbook on cannabis. You know, you might be able to argue whether you like some of the references or don't like some of the references, but it's really hard to argue there is no research on cannabis because she's literally just written a textbook and referenced it all.
A microscopic view of medical cannabis, a handbook for clinicians, medical professionals, dispensary staff, and patients.
Yeah, and I'll admit, I liked it so much I bought one and stuffed it in my suitcase and brought it back.
And you got her to sign it, I trust.
Well, it's got to be autographed by the author, right?
Yeah, no, it looks like a really cool book. I'm interested in having a look at it when you have a chance.
Absolutely. So let's listen to Kathy.
And we are here with Kathy Heigl. And Kathy, let's start with what, I hadn't heard of this before, a cytotechnologist. What is that, and what were you doing pre-cannabis?
I was looking at slides under a microscope for cancer. I had studied at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas. I looked at slides, and then I got kind of burned out. And I went and taught preschool for a while, teachers. And then I got into this writing this medical marijuana book. I feel like there's so much misinformation out there. We really need to get information in the hands of people who can really help people and their patients. A lot of doctors don't even know what the endocannabinoid system is. They never were taught that in college or even in their teaching. So we really need to go back and look at that, because once the endocannabinoid system is in homeostasis, a lot of diseases will go away.
And I should mention right off the top, so Kathy's book is
a microscopic view of medical cannabis. Now, there's lots of really cool stuff in here, including a lot of really good references. But you were saying that every so often you run into a surprise, and you said some of the terpenes surprise you. What sort of been a surprising terpene you've run into lately?
Phytol.
And what does phytol do?
Well, let's just look in here.
Let's look through the book. That's what it's here for.
I want them to know that the book actually has these things in there. So you look in here.
Yep.
And the thing that surprised me the most is it was working with insomnia. Most people think when they think of insomnia, they think of linalool, myrcene, those types of terpenes, but you have to look at all the terpenes. So a lot of these have pharmacological properties that you don't even know. So I've broken that into each one. I'll tell you what the aroma is, how it makes them feel. It's relaxing. And I also put the diseases that it may help.
And for those of you not staring at the book right now, this is very heavily referenced. Like everything that Kathy lists in here, she has a reference for. So it's both easy to read and well referenced. So let's talk a little bit about the diseases mentioned in the book.
Okay, I've taken 26 diseases and 19 cancers, and I have the description, the symptoms, the benefits, the risk of using cannabis with that disease or symptom. The cannabinoids, the terpenes, the flavonoids, the dosage, and the chemotype for each one. And I have a little picture at the end of each one of these that describes exactly everything I just said, but it's in a condensed form. So if you're a doctor or a budtender, or you can just flip into there, see what you're doing, and know what to tell the patient.
Thank you, Kathy. And she signed my book, so that's really cool, too. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So Marcus Roggen, a German guy, that literally lived all over the world. You know, I think he said Singapore, studied in the U.S., and he's now ending up in Vancouver. I was having lunch with Marcus and another gentleman, Terry O'Regan from Brains Bioceutical, and they were comparing accents. So, you know, Marcus, German, but he's lived all over the world. Terry had born in Britain, but grew up in South Africa. So, you know, they were sort of teasing each other about speaking English weird. And it made me think of my family, or I guess Doris's family. So Doris's family is all from Germany. And many years ago, Emily was just a toddler, we visited Doris's family in Hamburg. And at that point, you know, when they're speaking German, I don't speak German, but when they're speaking German, they all sounded the same. But when they started speaking English, it's like being at the UN. Like Doris's grandmother and one of the aunts, Doris's mom has two sisters, one of the aunts sounded very British. There was a cousin, so ballpark Doris's age, who sounded Australian because she had taken sort of a gap year and gone to Australia to work on her English. There was another aunt who went to university in Arizona, so to my ear, she sounded quote-unquote normal. And at that point, now it's 20 years ago, so I don't know what they went off to do. There was two younger cousins who hadn't yet finished high school, so hadn't sort of done this gap year, go learn English somewhere else. But what I really wanted was for one of them to go to somewhere like South Africa, and another one to go to like somewhere like Boston. And that way, you know, the family could, you know, have English accents from all over the world around one table. I thought that would have been super cool. So, but after that small digression,
thank you for that.
Marcus's company is called Delic Labs. It's in around UBC. And every year he gets new students. Now, he was giving a talk. Unfortunately, it was on while I was flying out of Florida, so I didn't get to listen to the talk, but it may give me a preview. He said his talk isn't really, because he does analytical chemistry, his talk really wasn't on the chemistry that he does as part of his job, but he found every year he got students, and he'd sort of have to explain cannabis nomenclature to them, because, you know, every time they came in, that it's like, so he started thinking about, well, is there a better way for us to classify cannabis? And my thought was, this is both brilliant and will piss off what we'll call the old timers or the cannabis aficionados, because this is completely different than, you know, I like Pink Kush. But I thought it was at least an interesting idea to talk about.
Oh, fascinating. I really enjoyed listening to this fellow talk, not just his accent, but just what he was saying. I Googled him, Powerlist 2020 analytical gurus, considered one of these cannabis scientist gurus in 2020. And I really like what he's saying. When he talks about measuring your high and comparing, you know, that everything's based on THC values, or, you know, based on, you know, how high you get on THC, that's not how we rate alcohol. You know, he's right. I don't rate alcohol by buying the strongest booze. You know, a cast whiskey will be about 55 to 60%, whereas a store-bought whiskey is 40%. Store-bought, they're both store-bought, but you know, a regular blended whiskey is 40%. Now, the reason you buy a cast whiskey is not because it's got higher alcohol. You buy because it's got different characteristics, right? And same with beer and wine. I mean, you drink a beer that has, you know, 4 to 6%, and then you drink a wine that's between 9 and 10. So I really liked how he used that. And then when he gets into the international units, so I think let's go in and listen to his accent, and because what he says, I think it's revolutionary. I think it needs to be heard in the cannabis industry. I think I don't care about pissing people off. I think he's got a point.
Me too. So let's listen to Marcus.
So at CanMed 2023, and we have Marcus, our German American Canadian chemist, who, you know, triathlete amongst other things, but the most important part is he's got an interesting lab in UBC, and we're going to have him tell us a little bit about what he does.
Hello, my name is Dr. Marcus Roggen. As you can tell, I'm German. I have a PhD in chemistry. I am serendipitously ended up in the cannabis industry, which is a long story, too long for this podcast, but I started off first working in California in the cannabis industry, hence the American thing. But if we go by the places I lived, then I'm also British, Swiss, and Singaporean, but I only hold a German nationality. I eventually moved to Canada to do more fundamental cannabis chemistry research, and we located this private lab that's now called Dalek Labs on the grounds of UBC in Vancouver.
Okay, Marcus, that is an interesting backstory, and too bad we don't have a little more time, but really why I keyholed you right now is you're giving an interesting talk tomorrow that unfortunately I'm going to miss about... we'll call it the naming of cannabis. I was hoping you could give us just sort of a quick summary of what you're going to be talking about tomorrow.
Sure, no problem. I have to quickly step back. What do we do in research? In our research, we do analytics of cannabis, not compliant testing, but like the complicated stuff, and in process analytics. We also do process optimization and some formulation work, like all the underlying chemistry. And we work closely with the university. I sponsor a few grad students and postdocs, and I hire lots of undergrad students for my work. And I have this rotating set of undergrad students that come to my lab. And I have to explain cannabis to them, which is weird, right? I have to tell students what cannabis is. I spoil the youth. But because we have students from all the different fields, as we're already a fundamental chemistry lab, we look at cannabis from its fundamentals and want to understand why is it done this way. And now you have to explain it to students who have no idea. So you really have to think, why are things done that way? And so we got stuck on the question, why is cannabis sold as total THC? So total THC is the weight percentage of THC in the plant, plus the weight percentage of THC acid with a weight correction. Okay. Because THCA decarboxylates and then is lighter. And that leads to the industry selling flower as like cannabis flower with 25% THC, total THC. And that educated and guided consumers to buying cannabis based on that number. And I try to make the argument that the math is wrong, it gives the wrong incentive, and we should present cannabis differently to allow the consumer to make a better decision of what product they actually want. Okay. And so in my talk, I first get to the point that total THC is miscalculated because it only corrects for the weight loss of the substance, but not about the weight loss of the sample, so the denominator. Okay. So as a quick example, a pure THCA crystal can never be 100% total THC because the current formula doesn't consider the weight loss of the sample, only the weight loss of the THC acid.
Okay.
So a pure THCA crystal would be 87% pure or total THC.
Okay.
This cannot be, right? A pure sample can't be impure.
Sure.
So that is the starting point. So if the number is wrong, the industry leaves on the table about $400 million a year because the price is dictated by that THC number.
Right.
And then I will make the argument that if any other consumer would buy their product the way cannabis consumers do, you would go in a wine store and select vodka because it has the highest alcohol number.
Right.
But that's not why you buy wine.
No.
You don't actually care about the alcohol number because it's always about the same. So one idea would be that we don't package cannabis by the eighth and then add the total THC weight percentage to it. We should package cannabis flower to a fixed amount of THC, so the weight might be an eighth or a little bit more, or a little bit less, but the consumer always gets the same amount of THC, so that's you don't wonder about the buzz. Mm-hmm. So you sell it by a standard buzz or a standard drink equivalent in the cannabis world. And then you can start educating the consumer about the flavor, the aroma, the effects, if you think. Mm-hmm. But the consumer never feels cheated of buying less THC because they always get the same amount.
Okay, A, that's fascinating. B, now we're going to go down a small rabbit hole. So occasionally Kirk and I, my co-host, we've cooked with cannabis and we've made canna butter or cannabis-infused avocado oil. And then if we are serving it to guests, the pharmacist, does the math, as far as he can tell, to try to figure out how much THC someone's going to get in a serving of, you know, the ice cream, the cookie, the whatever. And I'm assuming that I can just take the, like you said, the 23% THC, weigh the sample, and that will give me the amount of, I can use that as a starting point to figure out how much THC is in my final cooking product. Can I do that, or is that off too?
The error you introduce based on the miscalculation of total THC is minute in flower. It's like 0.5 percentage point to 1 percentage point. So that isn't the problem. The problem is that your extraction efficiency comes into play, and that's the other field of my research. And so we are wildly, there's a wide spectrum of what could have happened. So it's gambling. Yeah. It's a bit like Russian roulette with infused brownies. But the infused brownie or your infused cooking is actually the launching point for my second idea of how to label cannabis.
All right, we're all ears.
So do you, audience, take vitamins or vitamins, depending on which part of the English-speaking world you're in?
We're vitamins here, and of course they do.
Okay. So you take about 1,000 international units or IUs of vitamin D.
Yes, that's very common in Canada. We have no sunshine.
Right. How much is that?
I don't know, because no one, even as a pharmacist, no one's told us what an IU is. Like, I'm sure I could look it up, but you're right. They're all labeled as IUs, not milligrams.
Right. IUs, international units, have nothing to do with the weight or the moles, which is the number of atoms, of molecules, of that compound. I use are there to standardize the effect across different formulations and applications. So 1,000 IUs of a cookie give you the same effect as 1,000 IUs of a vape cart.
That would be great. That's a great idea.
And now call these IUs intoxication units, and you have my idea for the second way of labeling. You package cannabis as 1,000 IUs, and at that point, it can be a 90% pure THC vape oil, but you know how much THC is inhaled and how it affects in an inhalation aspect to get you buzzed, versus maybe 5 milligram THC brownie, which leads to the same intoxication, but the weight you inhaled from a vape cart and the weight you ate from a brownie in pure THC is different, but the effect is the same. So it would allow consumers of jumping from one product form to the next, knowing that they always get the same effect. People will tell that cannabis hits everyone different. That's fine, but it doesn't matter. It's about how it relates for you personally. So if you figured out that you need 1,500 IUs, then you know that this number you can now apply to all product types.
Okay, without getting too nerdy, because I'm going to lose some of the audience, but the problem is when I eat a gummy, a brownie, part of my high is the active metabolite. And if I inhale it, I avoid the active metabolite. So would your intoxication units try to account for that as well?
Right. Yes, because you would have to find a way. So going back to the standard unit, right, the drink, you just know it's always the same amount of THC milligrams you package. For IUs, you actually have to do clinical trials to figure out how this product affects the person. So you might have to take a blood plasma, or you have to make an intoxication score. Like you have to ask them, hey, how buzzed you are? Like a roadside test or something.
Okay.
So it's a bit more work, but I mean, they did it for nutraceuticals, for your vitamin C. So why can't we do that for cannabis?
Marcus, that's fascinating. Thank you very much. This has been great.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Kirk, those were sort of four of the interesting cannabis people that I met at in Florida. We got so many of them, rather than jam them all into one episode, we thought we'd split this up into two. So this will be part one of two. So maybe we should say things like, I'm Trevor Schufeld, I'm the pharmacist.
Yeah, Kirk Nyquist, the registered nurse, and we are Reefer Medness, the podcast, found at reefermed.ca and all your social platforms. Well, not all of them, I guess. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, and of course, our webpage is truly dynamic. And did anybody give you a song?
No.
How about the Marrakesh Express?
Sure. You're right. I just learned about that today. So, yeah. So, in honor of Ahmed and Morocco and the good things that are going on there, I would be tickled pink if Renee pulled up Marrakesh Express.
Perfect.
All right. We'll talk to you. Well, come on back, everybody, for part two.
Like the show? We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next.
Looking at the world through the sunset in your eyes, juggling the train through clear Moroccan skies, ducks and pigs and chickens call, animal carpet wall to wall, American ladies 5 foot tall and blue. Sweeping cobwebs from the edges of my mind. Had to get away to see what we could find. Hope the days that lie ahead bring us back to where they've led. Listen not to what's been said to you. Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh, all on board. All on board the train. America going south. Blowing smoke rings from the corners of my mouth. Colored cockles hang in the air. Charming cobras in the square. Stripes your leathers we can wear at home. Well, let me hear you now. Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? You know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express. They're taking me to Marrakesh. All on board the train. All on board the train. All on
You've heard the song, man. It's famous. You've heard the song.